Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Wow. Hey, Matt, how are you doing today?
Burke is back! Yes, I'm very happy to hear you back, my friend. I know you've got stories for days to tell, but no, I'm doing very, very well. Glad to have you back on. Glad to be back on with you. It's been a couple of weeks now since we were able to do this together. And whilst we always enjoy talking film, we always enjoy talking film together. So glad to have you back aboard the ship, my friend. I'm doing very well. It's an earlier start for us tonight. So I'm going to have an earlier finish, or I'm going to have some dinner after this. Maybe watch a film or so. I've been catching up on films that I've been meaning to see pre-Oscars. So I think I'm now caught up on 2024 in terms of the major releases. So, but no, I'm doing okay, my friend. I've got my tea, as is usual. If you listen to us for any length of time now, you know that I cannot do it without a cup of tea. I would say English tea, but we know it ain't. But I'm doing very well. You, though, you've been a busy, busy boy. Anyone who listened last week, you know, I told everyone where JB was. As far as I'm aware, though, is that it was a quiet, uneventful few days. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to save most of those stories for later. But I am exhausted. And some people think I might never, ever go back. But who knows? Sometimes you will go back. That's a reference to the movie we're going to be talking about here in a moment.
I hear that.
It has been a busy week at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. That is going to be more discussed later in the episode, but I got to see a lot of cool movies. I got to meet a lot of cool celebrities. I got into the first ever car accident that I, as an adult, I think, that I've been in the car of. So that was unexciting or whatever. I'm still very tired. I have not slept more than 4.5 hours for like the last 6 days. And I wanted to sleep in this morning, and per my usual, I woke up at like just before 7, hadn't seen the dogs really for a week either, so I walked the dogs, as is our normal routine, and then I just couldn't fall back asleep. I just saw, like, I'm literally fresh out of the theater, the movie that we're going to be talking about today, and I got to tell you, Matt, it was hard not to fall asleep a couple of times.
Man, I thought you'd have loved John.
To be fair to the movie, that's not inherently a criticism to the film. I am exhausted. I was fine before I got there, but once I sat into an air conditioned theater in the dark,
I know what you mean. After all those festival prestige films you've been watching, you needed to watch you know, a AAA film like tonight's film. I understand, John. I get you. I feel you.
I will say, the one thing I'll talk about before we get to South By is the Alamo Drafthouse theater chain is one of the best theater experiences I've ever had. And I felt that way in 2018 when I went there, so much so that there was at least 2 days in 2018 where I scheduled all of my movies simply to be at Alamo and not the other theaters. It's one of the only like full-time movie theaters that they use at the festival. Like the Paramount's the big theater, but I don't know if they only do like retro screenings there. Like, I don't know what the Paramount's used for outside of the South By. Like, I don't know what it's doing the rest of the year, because it's massive. I mean, it holds 1,000+ people. I know, because I was in a line with like 600 of them at one point. And
festivals.
But Alamo, man, like, I hadn't been since 2018, and they've remodeled, because they used to have like traditional movie seats, but like there was a wooden bar in front of you, and they do like food and drinks, right? And like you would write your order on a little piece of paper, they'd come by, boom. Now they've replaced all that with recliner seats with the table. They still have their little button system. It doesn't work quite as well. They're not as, like, they used to be like ninjas. Like, they would come by, drop your food off, and then be gone, and they would almost never be in your way. They are definitely in your way a little more.
Yeah.
But it's still there's at least three bumpers that are Alamo bumpers before the movies ever play, that are about, like, if someone's talking, instead of ordering food on the paper, you can write that someone's being rude, put it on the paper, they'll come, they'll read the paper, and then they will quietly warn the person, and if there's a second warning, they're out. And they have a very strict cell phone policy. They're one of the only theater chains that are really pushing for that. Like, they are trying to preserve the theater going experience. And All that said, I love that theater chain. We're actually getting one in Florida, but far away. We were supposed to get one in Orlando before COVID, and that shut down the plans. But being in my home theater today, it's the true statement, man. It's the Wizard of Oz. You know, my theater is old. It needs renovations. We haven't had seating changes, and I can't even tell you but being in my own theater always just feels like home. I've been, you know, going to that theater for a long time, but a lot over the last 6 years. And I always have like little complaints about it, but man, sitting in my theater, you know, going through my normal routine, it did feel good. It's even if the movie, isn't it? It is a comfort thing. It really is. Again, especially if you go as often as I go or as often as you go, it literally does feel like my home theater, like not just a theater that I call home theater. You know what I'm saying? Like it is a place that I've literally been going to for over 20 years. So
long there. You wouldn't change it for the world, but at the same time, you would change it for the world, but at the same time, you really wouldn't change it for the world. I was listening to all that, and then I had a pang of fear because I've just received my invite to the preview screening of Godzilla Times Kong. I thought, oh God, I don't know. But hey, look, I'll go along just for a laugh. But no, I know what you mean, my friend. I'm always a little bit on the fence about food and drink in cinema, and I don't mean popcorn and soda and Coke and that. I mean, over here in the UK, we have the Everyman chain, which is a bit more exclusive. You have, you know, we have leather recliners. There aren't as many seats because you pay a little bit more. With that, you have, like you say, you have food brought out to you, drinks brought out to you, alcohol, actual food as well. And at the same time, I'm like, you know what? If I'm watching a film, I don't want to smell what somebody else is eating. I just want to watch the film. I don't want somebody walking in front of me. Preserving the spirit of cinema, and then it was also given into some of that contemporization of it a bit as well.
That said, their buffalo cauliflower bites are so good. Good. That was a tuna. That was a tuna recommendation.
Big tuna,
and I got, like, you can get it with fries, and it always comes with celery, or you can just get it with the cauliflower. It's a little different in price. I had both of those. I did try their fried pickles. I'm a big fried pickle fan. I do prefer fried pickle chips to fried spears, and they are the spears at Alamo, and I was a little disappointed about that. They have a unlimited refill popcorn bowl.
Yes.
And their popcorn is quite good, I got to say. I got it without butter, but you can get it with clarified butter, so I can't imagine it's not incredible. They also have churro popcorn. Is like cinnamon sugar popcorn. I did not try,
anything with cinnamon sugar on it is a huge win. Anything with buffalo on it is a huge win. Anything with butter on it is a huge win. So everything I've just said about the Draft House, I take it back. It sounds amazing, but man,
I sent you pictures, man. They have that hallway set up like The Shining. Their hallway right now is set up to be The Shining. Like, it's got room 237. They have the twins are projected on the wall, so as you turn the corner, like, the twins are just staring at you.
That's cool.
And then the elevators are projected, and blood will, like, fake, you know, like, it's projected blood, but like, blood gushes out. It's pretty wild walking down it.
Imagine having a fear of that film and just walking into you know, go see something, and then suddenly see those two kids who are legitimately creepy staring back at you. My only question for you, John, now is, you're talking about all these, you know, very, very nice food you can get, delicious meals, great popcorn, wonderful foyer effects, but did you not eat this buffalo cauliflower or this clarified butter popcorn from a Dune 2 popcorn bucket?
I did not. That's an AMC exclusive. Was not at Alamo, but they did have.
It was hilarious to think of you doing that.
Yeah. Please don't. Don't ever think of me with that bucket. But I do want to confirm something, though. None of what I just said is imaginary. But the movie that we're going to talk about this week is. And folks, if you haven't seen the new Blumhouse film, that's what we're about to get into. It is our spoiler free review. But here it goes. We've got the ever ready, ever talented Jeff Wadlow directing and writing. If you're not familiar with him, folks, well, you should be ashamed of yourself, because he's done such great things.
He has.
As Blumhouse's Truth or Dare, Fantasy Island, not the TV show, the remake, the movie, the horror reimagining, I guess I should say. He did Kick-Ass, not one, two, which everybody was really into. Apparently, it did The Curse of Bridge Hollow, which I don't know, but it's got Marlon Wayans in it. Cry Wolf, which I've never seen, but I think that's the one that got him all the other jobs. And Never Back Down, which I will... I can't say it's a... Oh, wait, is that Never Back Down 2 or just Never Back Down? Never Back Down, I don't think it's a good movie, but it's got MMA and I like it. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and argue that it's good, but most of those other movies are quite bad. And the cast of Imaginary, you've got DaWanda Wise, Tom Payne, who Tom Payne looks like a dude, but he's not a dude that I've ever seen in anything, but he looks like a dude I've seen in things. Veronica Falcon, or Falcone, Betty Buckley, who is basically playing the same character from Split. I don't know if you caught that, but like...
I have thoughts.
Tegan Burns is the teenage daughter, and then Piper Braun is the kind of the lead character. Really, DaWanda Wise is the lead character, but Piper is co-lead.
Yes, lead support.
Yeah, she's the child lead, but... all right, so the synopsis of this movie. When Jessica's DaWanda Wise, moves back into her childhood home with her family, her youngest stepdaughter, Alice, develops an eerie attachment to a stuffed bear named Chauncey she finds in the basement. Alice starts playing games with Chauncey that begin playful. Folks, if you're this many words into a synopsis, something is wrong. Yes. That Chauncey that begin playful and become increasingly sinister, which is debatable. As Alice's behavior becomes more and more concerning, Jessica intervenes only to realize Chauncey is much more than a stuffed toy bear she believed him to be.
And breathe.
Yeah, for real, dude. So many words. That is not a synopsis, guy. If you can't sum it up in a sentence, you've done something wrong.
Chauncey, three times.
28% Rotten Tomato critic score, 53 audience score, 34 Metascore, 4.9 IMDb user score, and then a 2.1 on Letterboxd. This movie is one of the first times I can remember scrolling through my friends' ratings on Letterboxd and seeing almost all one stars until I got to Matt's. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. I won't say what that was. And if you don't follow Matt on Letterboxd, you should. But I literally, again, just got back home from watching this. I will admittedly say I definitely looked away from the screen a few times, and not because I was afraid. I may have been looking at my phone, or I may have been falling asleep, because the movie is a little boring. It drags at points. I don't want to slag a young actress, but at first, especially, I was like, oh boy. I do think she actually has some good moments in the movie. One in particular is the end.
Is this Piper Braun?
Yes.
Yes.
At the very end, and I won't say what happens because I don't want to reveal things, but there's a joke that she gets to throw, and I think she delivers it spot on. And I thought it was surprisingly funny because of the rest of the movie I didn't really care for. I don't think necessarily the performances are bad. I do think a lot of the dialogue is real bad. And I have some quotes I typed out.
Please.
So like sometimes I was on my phone because I had to. I thought this quote was particularly terrible. You should never have to say goodbye to the things you love. We have a teenage boy who I don't remember. I don't know who the actor was. Maybe Matthew Sato. I'm pretty sure that's the boy that likes the older daughter, Taylor. He uses the bathroom, is scared while using the bathroom in a way that I think is really dumb, by the way, because he like doesn't look. Like, peripheral vision's a thing, movies. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, even if you're looking directly at something that's slightly to the right, you would see what's coming up that's there in front of you, unless you have zero peripheral vision. The camera doesn't. The camera is zoomed in and focused, but that's not how our eyes work. So, like, it's dumb when he's suddenly scared of something that's on the counter that he would have still noticed was already there. But nevertheless, he gets scare-peed, pees on himself, but then wipes his hands on the towel.
The towel.
Does not wash his hands. Just wipes his hands on the towel. And I'm like, that's, you know, like, movie, we get that he's kind of a jerk, but like, that's the thing I think which is wrong with every character is like these extreme versions of what the archetype is. Like, the older daughter is so over the top mean and rude at times. And it's like, you like, she can be protective of her little sister and not be like this caricature of a teenager that this guy has, you know, dreamed up. Yeah, there's just stuff like that throughout the film that I'm just like, this is terrible. It's none of it's good. Like we get to a place that is a little bit, I don't want to spoil this movie, but the look of the place, especially the way they choose to use the camera when we first enter this place, looks so dumb and so terrible. It's, you know, like, I understand you want to create this world that feels otherworldly, but man, sometimes the techniques that we use to get there just don't work out. And that was definitely the case here. There's a long stretches where like nothing really happens. All of the scares are real generic, and a lot of like just loud noises or cutaway to somebody being scared, and it feels trite and unearned. I actually think the root of the idea is interesting, but the root of the idea apparently is so grounded in Inside Out's Bing Bong.
Jesus.
That it's referenced at least twice, if not three times in this movie. The older teenage daughter uses Bing Bong as a reference to try to wrap her head around what's happening in the story of the film, which is just like, it feels like he's saying, hey, if you don't get what's going on, you know, Bing Bong, it's that, but scary. And it's like, oh, guy, that was your idea, wasn't it? That's what happened. They kept
saying Bing Bong.
Yeah, they literally said, it's not like they alluded to a Pixar movie. They literally said it.
Yep.
By name, as if to say, I don't have time for you to like develop in the story that I'm writing, so I'm just going to reference something so that you will get what I'm going for. At least that's how it felt. Again, I have no inside information of what his process was or what his inspiration was, but given its overabundance in this film, I'm like, wow, okay. And again, movies reference movies all the time, and it's sometimes works really, really well. Sometimes it doesn't, and I would feel like in this case it really doesn't, because the idea of an imaginary friend existed long before Bing Bong, you know what I'm saying? Like, so for it to be that specific felt, you know, a little bit on the nose of probably where this was inspired by. I do think, to be fair to this movie, I think there's a little bit of a metaphor for childhood trauma. I don't think it does anything with it or comments on it. It just is like, yeah, sometimes we had a messed up childhood and it haunts us. To give credit, because like I find a lot of the horror films that I like, I connect with the allegory behind it, right? Those are the ones, yep, that really click for me. So at least I can acknowledge that, hey, you tried, you had something. Maybe he didn't even know he had that. Maybe it was just an actual thing that he has. He's like, oh, what, unresolved issues from my childhood haunting me? That's a thing I can talk about? Like, yeah, it is, guy. And you could probably do a pretty cool job with it. And the angle is interesting. I think the angle of the imaginary friend who's not truly imaginary, or is, that's kind of unclear, I guess, to be fair, what actually happens in this movie. But there you go. It's another one of those March Blumhouse movies where you're kind of like, why did I watch this? Not good. Matt, you gave it what? How much did you dislike this movie?
I promised myself I wouldn't swear when talking about it, and I almost gave it away straight away. I hated this film. I gave it half a star on Letterboxd only because you have to give it something. Because I'm sick and tired, John. I'm sick and tired of all of this crap. You know how much you're now a horror. You're becoming a horror veteran. You know how much I love the genre as well. It's my favorite genre. I've lived it and loved it for years, decades. And it's always been a genre where you can get some real stinkers in there, real low budget, unimaginative stinkers. So it's not like this film, which is one of those, is anything new. But I don't know if maybe it's just a Blumhouse model. My problem with this film is it has nothing to say, but it literally just feels like they've said, here's a couple of million dollars, go and make something. What's that? Put the bear in the marketing. It's not going to really play much into the film, but put the bear in there, or it's not going to be what you think it's going to be. And we'll make our money back, and then we'll continue. And it's been the Blumhouse model for years. And, you know, I think the Blumhouse model is actually a really good, sustainable model for a studio. I think what they do over there is great in terms of keeping themselves afloat. However, recently you've had Night Swim, Five Nights at Freddy's, and many people, John included, would also throw The Exorcist Believer in there as films mm-hmm. which are just bloody awful. And Night Swim especially as well feels very much like this one. I hated that too, because they are so full of nothingness. They're so bland, they're so banal, they're so vanilla, they're so generic. There is nothing to them that it just feels like an absolute slog to get through. It feels lazy, and it just feels like the worst form of how can we make a few more dollars so maybe in a year or two's time we can make another film like Get Out, you know, put a few more quid towards something like that. It just made it really wound me up. It's the first film in a long time where I'm telling you, John, I had to almost pin myself to the chair because I just wanted to leave. I hated it. And I, unlike you, though, Jamie, I can't sit here and say anything good about the film, not from a place of misery or grumpiness or edginess even. Absolutely not. It's coming from a place of honesty. There's nothing in this film which worked for me other than the fact that DeWanda Wise, man, she tries. You know, she's our lead here. She tries here. But whatever, you know, anyone could have been cast in this role, what they're given to do, what they're given to say, you're in a hiding to nothing. You have no hope in a film such as this. And one of the things I commented on originally was how the hell did this get a 15 rating in the UK? And for those who aren't in the UK, I'm guessing it's like an R rating in the States.
Wow.
If you are under 15 years old, you cannot see this film. So
that's
weird. Yeah, you know, and you've seen the film, John, so you know there's, and again, we're not going to spoil it, but you could have got away with a PG. You could have got away with a U for this film almost, other than a scene near the beginning where someone's got some blood on their teeth. That's pretty much the extent of what you're going to see here, other than some truly awful practical and visual effects. So how this film got 15 rating is beyond me. I don't know what the BBFC were drinking on their lunch that day, but that is a good joke in itself. You've got the bear in the marketing, Chauncey. Yeah, when the marketing says one thing, the film says another, as if to what this bear is actually going to be doing. And that they say the name, I put that in my letterbox review, they say the name Chauncey 1,000 times at least. I don't know if they're trying to get this bear over and become this new horror icon or whatever, but they keep saying Chauncey, Chauncey, Chauncey. Oh, so I thought the acting was terrible. And then Betty Buckley turned up. And I almost threw myself through the screen at this point. At one point, she starts screaming and the camera pans focuses down on her as she looks up to the heavens
with
her arms.
Yes, I know exactly what shot you're talking about.
I said, what is going on? I'm having to keep myself in check here. And it got past the point of being able to laugh. I was like, who signs this off? Yeah, but yes, of course, Jason Blum. But who looks at this and thinks, this is ready to go out into the world? There is nothing in this. And I hate being that guy. I've said it before on episodes where I don't want to come out. It's easy to come out and dunk on a film than it is maybe to talk about a critically acclaimed one. But I don't like coming out and absolutely, you know, destroying somebody's work. Because, you know, the old saying, hundreds of people worked on this film, people poured their life and heart and soul into it. And it's probably somebody's favourite film. I don't know how, but it probably is. But I can only speak from my own experience. I don't know how the film ended up the way it did in terms of the narrative. It just think this just happened. Tom Payne is this kind of middle class English rock star. I guess he's in Imagine Dragons or something. And he's like, he's like the world's most oblivious father. And, you know, he's there and then he's not. And then he's back again. The child actor, the teen actress. I totally agree with you on this. I don't want to blame the actors. I don't want to blame any of the actors in this film. But yeah, she was directed in a way that she was so unlikable, which I thought, like you said, the archetype of like the bratty, moody, rude teenager, to the point where I don't care about the characters when they're like that.
Yep.
The boy that you mentioned is similar to that. The young girl.
Yeah.
The young girl, she's just fed so much rubbish. And there's a therapy scene in this, which I pointed to.
Oh, man.
It was one of the funniest things I've seen because of the audio stuff that's going on and things and what they're being told to say. It was in a horror film, I'm laughing now. It's one of the funniest things I've seen. And I don't like laughing at horror because I'm one of those defenders of horror. You know, you can't laugh at horror. If you say a horror film's funny, well, you just weren't watching it properly, or you're more scared than you want to believe. But no, I was giggling at this. And listen, this could work as gateway horror if you really don't want your kids to get scared or anything. If you want them to have a good laugh, this might work as gateway horror. And, you know, I put in my review, it could traumatise people who then move on to better films like Madame Web. Yeah, I've said that. Madame Web is a better film than this, hands down. And even that is a one-star film. Yeah, it's one of the worst horror films I've seen in years. And I want to say something nice about this. I really do, John. I think the atmosphere isn't great. I didn't like the music, including Chauncey's theme. I didn't like the...
Which telegraph- is Home Alone.
It's a Home Alone thing, like you mentioned. Which I didn't like the telegraphed scares, and of which there are barely
many.
I didn't like the family dynamics. I didn't like when characters would just turn up, like Betty Buckley's character just turns up and suddenly just knows everything. But I'm saying it just knows everything. I didn't like the visuals towards the end. I didn't think the major monster was, it looked awful. I don't think it's scary at all. I didn't care who lived or died. If anyone did in this film, I can't even remember. It's just the laziest film I've seen in a long time, John. It's so uninspired. And I wish to all God that we weren't reviewing on this, because I've just put it out there in the world now, a really negative review. But listen, for every negative film like Imaginary, there's going to be a great horror film around the corner. Blumhouse's next film also worries me, because it's a remake of Speak No Evil, which was this fantastic, I think it was Danish horror film from 2-3 years ago. It made my top 15 at least of that year, because it is chilling. It is cruel. It's vicious, but it serves the story. It's not a shock film that's there to shock you. It all serves the story. Like it seems like only European horror at the minute can do. I just can't imagine what Blumhouse are going to do with this film. How they're going to? James McAvoy's in it. Mackenzie Davis and McAvoy. So that's good. Hopefully this can be a Get Out level. But then I also look at it and think it's a remake, so it's not an original Blumhouse creation. But yeah, for this one though, John, it doesn't bring me any joy, as much as it seems like I'm enjoying it, because I am a little bit actually, but it doesn't bring me much joy to say I think this is abysmal. I really hated this film, and I don't use that word very often, but it made me so annoyed when I got back watched this.
I think the worst horror film I've seen in recent years is Slender Man. Because that one was so chopped up in post that there were like scenes missing, and so it almost wasn't even a movie. I guess so. I guess you could make that argument that it didn't get like what was supposed to be there in the movie. Like you could tell where things were just missing. And the thing is though, I saw a movie at South by that I really didn't like, and like a lot, like real bad, where like I was also in the front row of this particular movie, and so I like I knew I needed to get out before the director came in for the Q&A, because I was like, I will roll my eyes. Like the only question I wanted to ask was like, what the F, you know, I wanted to just ask that, like just tell me what you were thinking, because it's not on the screen. Like whatever you thought you were doing didn't happen. But I still think I like that more than this, and that's this just felt crazy, real boring, more so than anything.
It is boring. Like, that is it. It's boring, and that is one of the worst things you could say about a horror film, is if you're not going to be scary, give us the atmosphere.
Yeah.
We have something there.
Because for a large, like, you definitely need to build anticipation in any movie. Like, we should always be building to something, but you have to give us something to climb, and there's nothing. It's like we're on a slick slope, and we are just sliding down, waiting. But we're not supposed to go in the way we're going. We're just like not getting anywhere. We're just, you know, running in circles almost. And once we finally get to the quote unquote scary part, it's you've lost me, and you've built nothing up, because prolonging is not the same as building suspense or building tension. Like just keeping us from having something, the edging of horror, if you will, it doesn't work. And a lot of horror films are doing that. And those are the ones that you can tell they just don't get what the process is supposed to be. You can't allude that something might happen for 45 minutes or worse almost 90 minutes, and then the last half hour finally have some things start happening.
Yeah,
you got to pace that out. And it's frustrating when you see a movie that it like keeps referencing like, ooh, Chauncey this and Chauncey that. And it's like I guess it's honestly in the trailer reveals the origins of Chauncey. Like I 100% remember hearing in the trailer them say Chauncey's origins that is played out in the third act. And like the most of the movie, the one character is completely clueless to the thing that in the trailer we hear them say. So I'm like, why would you do that? Like, why would you stretch it out for so long?
Because
there's just this lack of agency.
An hour and 40 minutes, John, as well.
Yeah. And it feels like it.
I don't think you could take 15 minutes off this film and make it any better, but you could at least make it more sympathetic to the audience who, you know, they don't want to sit through any more than this and they have to. Okay. If I'll cede to your point that the idea is decent, like the initial kind of bare bones concept, of course it's good. You know, it's there ripe for a horror film to really sink its teeth into. But at the end of the day, it comes down to how well it's pulled off. And for me, it just wasn't at all. But there, you know, the idea is there. I just wish studios, because I'm seeing it more and more now. And look, there is a place for this kind of, well, I'm still going to call this like a cheaply made gateway horror, which is aimed at getting pit bums in seats. There is a place for that in every genre. And of course there is. I'm not saying let's stop doing these films and make them better. But I just wish studios would stop trying to market their horror character as, you know, the next big thing in horror. It worked for Megan because Megan could pull it off as the doll had personality. You know, they really push in Chauncey in this film. I've seen every horror film now, major or minor, seems to want to push their character so that we can have the new icon, the new Freddy, the new Jason. You know, the closest one in recent years is probably Art the Clown from Terrifier, but he's only had two films and a few shorts. But then again, Art the Clown could back it up.
But that's the thing. You can't force an icon. Icons become icons.
Exactly. And I feel like they're trying to force them on us.
Big time. 100%. They're pre-selling. They're expecting it to be a horror icon, which I think if you look at the ones you listed that are good, like I'm sure the designer hopes it will be an icon. But it's different to like expect it to become this cultural thing. Like same thing with Alien, like the Xenomorph, you know what I'm saying? Like no one knew how iconic that would become, or the Predator mask, which the Predator that we now know wasn't the original design for the Predator. So like, you know, didn't even get that. And
those icons became icons on their own merit, though, didn't they? Like Freddy became Freddy, like you know. Jason became the Jason that Jason Goes to Hell and Jason Goes to Space and all that. Jason X. But in those first films, The Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and all of them, Halloween, they were just the bad guy. They weren't set up, like you say. It wasn't preempted that they become the star. It just happened because audiences naturally gravitated towards them.
Well, Jason the most, right? Because he's not even in the first movie. So it's like even more interesting.
Exactly. As the first Scream got people.
Mm-hmm. And most people think of the hockey mask, which it doesn't show up till the end of the second movie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the hockey mask. He doesn't always have that. In one of the films, he's got a bag on his head.
Like the potato sack. Definitely in the
recut, icons by themselves, JB. They weren't. And I mentioned Art the Clown. I know we're going to move on shortly, but I mentioned Art the Clown. Again, he can back it up because he's just a nasty SOB. But Megan, we all know they pushed Megan. That dance went big. And, you know, Megan did well at the box office and most people seem to enjoy it. So that's one that kind of almost goes against our argument in a way that was a preempted, you know, horror, I don't want to say icon, but popular character who actually kind of lived up to it a little bit. Let's see how the second film comes out, I think next year that it comes out. Let's see how that goes. Let's see how they push it. Will they do Megan versus Chucky and really, really kind of try and ensconce her in the genre? But yeah, I just wish they'd stop doing it, especially when it's a goddamn teddy bear.
Yeah, well, folks, that's our review of Imaginary, and we are not fans.
No.
So it's definitely something for those to check out, but know that we are saying it is bloody awful.
Yes, sir.
Next up, We're going to Concessions of a Cinephile. This is our segment where we discuss movie-related content. We would be remiss not to talk about, even though it's a few days old now, the Oscars. The Oscars happened on Sunday. I wasn't able to watch them in their entirety, although Matt did a terrific job of sending me updates.
100 messages.
yes, but we did catch some of it. We had some time between Cryptic, the movie I mentioned a minute ago that I was about to go see, and Monkey Man. No, it was Sunday night. What did I see Sunday night? Oh, I saw the TV Glow, and then I had Cryptic right after that. We went to a restaurant next to an Alamo Drafthouse, and they had the Oscars on, so we caught like with captions though, so I couldn't hear it. I could just see it. We caught the Best Picture winner, Best Director, and I think Best Actor I saw, but I didn't get to see any of the performances live. But the Oscars happened, and it was mostly what we expected, I would think, right?
Yeah, was there anything? Obviously, I sent John because I knew John was at SXSW, and I know you were maybe not able to watch it, but I know you said you were going to try and see some of it. So I wasn't sure how much of it you could see. So I was JP's roving reporter on the scene. I don't know how many messages I sent, but quite a lot. But I'll mention the ceremony in a minute, but I agree. I think pretty much everything was generally how we expected, but. What about, was there any surprises in there for you? And also, I want to hear your view on the what people are calling like the big upset, which I'm not entirely sure it was, which is Emma Stone winning Best Actress over Lily Gladstone for her wonderful performance in Killers of the Flower Moon. Lots of people were, you get the usual kind of hubris, people getting very upset and very up in arms saying that Lily Gladstone was robbed. I think that kind of takes away from Emma Stone's wild performance in Poor Thing. So what do you think about the, and again, guys, awards are awards. They're not for everyone. We get that. We say that in every show, but we're talking about them. What did you think about that then? Did you see it as daylight robbery, John, or was it just a tough decision between two great performances?
I think it's a tough decision between two great performances. It is a shame. I picked Gladstone, and I loved Emma Stone's performance. Like, I'm not mad at it. And I also don't know if anyone could have been as gracious in that moment. Yeah. No, because she was aware that Lily was kind of the favorite, and if not even saying the favorite because of the performance, which I do think is incredible. I think she was fantastic. My favorite part of Killers. And I also love Plemons, to be honest, but she was my favorite part. But Emma knew, like, there's a lot at stake with if Lily wins, it's the first, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's all these caveats that go with her win that Emma now has trumped, Like, so it's and also because Emma's won already. So it's like you could have gave it to the new person who is making this big, tremendous film, nod to Scorsese, whose movie gets 0-10. I think I've heard the fourth movie of his to go 0-10 at the Oscars.
You're not wrong. No, yeah. People weren't crazy. Happy about that either.
And of course,
I thought he was going to pick coming up at least.
Right. And honestly, I thought it would be that. Especially because, again, Emma has won previously. But that doesn't mean she's not deserving. And Emma has such a cool filmography to be a 2-time Oscar winner.
Yeah.
And for the two movies that she's won Oscar, well, La La Land, very traditional Hollywood musical, incredible performance, definitely deserved that win. But this is not a traditional Oscar movie.
No.
And it's not.
We had Michelle Yeoh last year for Everything Everywhere as well. It's kind of almost on that plane, because Everything Everywhere to me isn't a traditional Oscar fare either, and Michelle Yeoh's performance maybe wasn't either. So maybe the tides are changing a bit.
Yeah, it might be. We had a lot of international content in the major categories for a change, which is a good sign. There were some cool nods to other movies, because Oppenheimer, while it won 7, I think, right?
Yes.
It was nominated for 11.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So not bad to win that many, but also didn't sweep, which means we did get to see some other movies get recognition. Obviously, I think most people thought Poor Things would win all those under the line categories. Yes. that it won for production and costume, because it's incredible looking. It's such a cool. It's Tim Burton and Wes Anderson merged together in my eyes, like the aesthetic of Poor Things. but yeah, like the one thing people were talking about heavily, because I saw this is a little preview spoiler of what I want to talk about in a few minutes, but I saw The Fall Guy
two days
after the Oscars. So Ryan Gosling is there with David Leitch. And they mentioned that they directed the stunt like montage thing or whatever they did at the Oscars, which I again didn't get to see because I was not watching the Oscars.
Yep.
But the irony of that, and someone asked in the audience, Leitch, about, don't you think the Oscars should have the stunt award? Which everyone knows. Yes, of course. Everyone has been saying it's so baffling that they haven't done it, because it's a topic that is so obvious. And for a group that we don't hear enough about the number of deaths related to stunts, but there's far more than people think. Every year it seems like there's one or two that happen that we don't hear about unless you're looking at the trades or unless you're like connected to the industry and somehow.
Yes.
And that's not even getting into the injuries that they sustain. That's just the worst case scenario, you know? And, for it to not be recognized at this point, and we're talking stunts go back to the old days, and they were doing them with like real bullets. Like there's the story of the original Scarface, I think, or it's one of the James Cagney movies where they use real bullets. They shot real bullets in his general direction.
Yeah,
that's how movies were made. Like, and it's like insane to think. Now, and yet so for over almost 100 years, stunts have been a major part of movie making, and yet the Academy Awards don't have an award. It's baffling. And then to have the montage about it and still not have an award, and also having announced casting for the upcoming award and not stunts. But then the second thing that they keep doing, and this isn't, I guess, exclusive to the Academy, but to the hosts of these shows, stop demeaning the animated category.
Oh, I did send you that, didn't I? I mean,
you did
on the stunt thing. That was the oddest thing. Hey, look, is it cool that they at least acknowledged it? Yes, but they'd mentioned that they've got best casting as an award next year, which is great news, because I do think casting directors absolutely deserve way more attention.
Yeah, yeah.
But then to have this, you know, admittedly very cool montage of stunt performances, and then be like, anyway, moving on. I think most people like me assume they were going to say, well, in a year or 2 years time, we are going to have best stunt work as well. And to not do that, to not announce that, it felt a little bit tone deaf. I think it kind of almost felt like a participation award, but without even giving them the trophy. A little
knock on
the back and nothing else. But yeah, the animation thing. Look, Jimmy Kimmel hosted this year, and he's a safe pair of hands. We all know that. Kimmel isn't really going to rock the boat too much. You get someone like Ricky Gervais, the people don't like it because, well, he's British and says what he thinks. And also, I will say, the majority of the winners this year were British. That made me very pleased to see here so many British accents with people picking up those trophies. We're carrying you guys over there in Hollywood. But yeah, Kimmel's a safe pair of hands, but I don't think he was particularly great this year. He said a few comments which were borderline just not very kind to people, like Robert Downey Jr. And a few other people. He did make one zinger of a joke about Donald Trump, and I'm always here for that. But that was based on Trump tweeting has there ever been a worse host. I'm like, come on, dude, we want to just go back to put your small hands somewhere else. And the animation thing, yeah, he's kind of saying to the crowd, hey, now how many of the guys got their kids to vote? Which you could look at that and say he's poking fun of the people who actually did that. But the fact that they then, and I mean raced through these awards, if animated short, live, you know, documentary short and live action short, and that they were pretty much gone. They sped through those, and even the best animated feature, which to some people was a surprise, with The Boy and the Heron winning, they blasted through that. Now Hayao Miyazaki wasn't there. There are many reasons as to why that is. The guy is quite old now. Other people say it's some sort of form of protest against war and things. I don't know. Either way, he wasn't there. But, you know, they took that and were like, yep, anyway, moving on, washed our hands of that. And it's a real shame, because the animated category with Across the Spider-Verse, with The Boy and the Heron, with Nimona, with Robot Dreams, and I've seen so many people absolutely digging that film, and to a lesser extent, Elemental, has some of the best films released last year, or at least some of the most heartfelt, some of the best stories of last year. And for it to still be seen as this kids category is ridiculous, especially at the biggest show of the year when it comes to film. I thought Kimmel needed to check himself there, and a few, and I don't think he was overly great throughout. He wasn't a train wreck or anything stupid like that. Not at all. But I just, he's been better, I think. But overall, though, I think the ceremony was pretty good. Actually, there was a few moments in it which I really enjoyed. You mentioned the Fall Guy. There's a great the stunt section was introduced by Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, who of course will be starring in the Fall Guy, and that was a lot of fun as they had real natural chemistry going back and forward about Oppenheimer and Barbie and Barbenheimer. And
yeah, I did see that later.
Ryan Gosling saying, "Well, look, at the end of the day, you know, you're in our trail because we made the most money." And Emily Blunt shooting back that, "Well, Oppenheimer's been nominated for pretty much everything, and you haven't." And it was a lot of fun to see that. There was a wonderful skit between Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Michael Keaton about Batman villains and Batman, which was so much fun. There was a great moment with John Cena, just came out pretty much naked, which surprised everyone, and that was an awful lot of fun. And of course, immediately people photoshopped that, well, they couldn't see him, they could just see a floating card. That was a lot of fun. He was announcing the best costume award. And of course, the performances were great. The live song performances, Billie Eilish when she won for What Was I Made For, fantastic performance for a fantastic song. Ryan Gosling and Wolfgang Van Halen and Slash and all of the Kens and everybody absolutely brought the house down with I'm Just Ken. You know, one of the best performances of a song I've ever seen at the Oscars, which made it even funnier when they were like, "And now to announce the best song, it's the other one." But you know, the Billie Eilish song is, you look at it objectively, it's by far the better song. But I'm Just Ken, man, the energy, the fun, I thought it was going to pull it off. I thought it was going to win, and I would have loved it. I was a little bit bummed that it didn't, just because the performance was so damn good. Gosling is such a star. He's got such star power and charisma. And we got the La La Land reunion with him and Emma Stone singing into the mic. Man, I had to be still my beating heart. But other than that, he says, coming down, there wasn't an awful lot of surprises. One of the best, one of the biggest pops of the night online and in the auditorium, by the sounds of it, was Godzilla Minus One, John. $15 million budget. Is now an Academy Award winner for Best Visual Effects. I thought that was wonderful to see. And the guys came up on stage with their little Godzilla figures. Some of them had bow ties on to collect their award, and really, really earnest speech, which they were played off stage as they were dedicating the film to their deceased colleague. But, you know, Oscar's going to Oscar, I guess. But so that I loved seeing Godzilla Minus One win that. I was so pleased to see the Zone of Interest win for Best Sound, because that sound was so that film was so haunting. It is the backbone of what is already an incredible film, but that is insane. And Jonathan Glazer also won Best International Film. Jonathan Glazer used his speech to denounce the ongoing war and Israel-Palestine conflict, which has seen him get praise and vitriol in equal measures. But other than that, yeah, there's not really an awful lot of surprises. I was pleased to see American Fiction win for adapted screenplay, but everyone else won with what we thought they won. Devine Joy Randolph won for best supporting role in The Holdovers. RDJ won for best supporting role in Oppenheimer. Cillian Murphy, best actor, Oppenheimer best film. There wasn't really many surprises, but you know what, John? I'm not really that upset about it. I think pretty much across the board, even the quote unquote robbery, Emma Stone was fantastic. Lily Gladstone was insane, as was Emma Stone. And, you know, I don't think there was a conspiracy between over 10,000 voters to not give it to Lily Gladstone. I don't buy into anything like that. I just think it was a stacked pool and somebody had to win. And it was, I'd like to think it wasn't a big margin, but I was happy with the ceremony. I stayed up late to watch it. And yeah, but as always, I enjoyed it, my friend.
I feel that. Folks, that's our kind of commentary on the Oscars. You know, I didn't get to watch it. I like Kimmel as the host, and I've listened to two different podcasts recap the Oscars, so I feel like I got the experience. And I liked Oppenheimer. It was not in my top five of the year. I don't think it was in your top five.
I think it was my number. It was either my number five or my number six. It was there or thereabouts.
It was still, like that said, there was just because it was so many good movies. It wasn't because it wasn't a great movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, of course, and I can't be mad because I got Everything Everywhere last year, which I didn't think when that movie skyrocketed to my number one. Never thought it was going to be winning all those awards. You know, I thought this is a movie for me. This is like Scott Pilgrim. It's not going to click with major audiences. And then somehow it did. That will forever be my favorite Oscar like situation. Cause that's not what anyone was expecting when that came out in like May or March or April, whatever it was. Anyways, that's our coverage of the Oscars, or our commentary, our thoughts on it. Let's go to media consumption. These are movie, TV show, video games, podcasts, etc. that we use to pass the time between recordings, not including imaginary, of course. So, Matt, what have you been consuming since? We haven't really spoke about this for weeks, but we're not going to list everything we've consumed since the last time we discussed it. We're just talking generally. Recently, what have you seen?
You're on. Yeah, mine are all from the last week, or like the night or two before the Oscars up until now. I've been scrubbing myself, man, to try and get the stench of imaginary off of me. But I've been listening to Dead Meat and watching their show. Same for the horror show, the podcast, and Double Toasted on YouTube, as I always do. In terms of films, OJB, I'll go backwards in time. I watched The Holdovers, finally.
Yes.
And I texted you about it saying, God damn, that was bloody, that's a bloody good film. And this was in amongst all of the hoopla about, is it plagiarised, is it not? I don't think it is, but I'm not here for that. I'm here to say that The Holdovers is so damn good. I don't know why it was released after Christmas in the UK, but I do believe it will go on to be one of those kind of curmudgeonly Christmas hits. And I'm here for it. Paul Giamatti is insanely good in this, as was Davine Joy Randolph. And the lad, the young teen as well. I can't think of his name now. He's so good. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, guys, I don't want to say
something. Sesso.
Yes, I can't think of his name, but it'll come to me at some point. But guys, I would say, guys, wait till Christmas to watch it, because just for the feels. But I don't know if I can ask you to wait that long. But I also watched American Fiction, which I thought was damn good as well. Really, really liked that. And again, Jeffrey Wright, so damn good in that lead role. I think it's so smart. The writing was good. It was biting. It was cutting. I don't know what it is. I love these films that are set in these almost like picturesque small towns. I find I gravitate towards those an awful lot. But, you know, I really, really enjoyed American Fiction and was so pleased to see it walk away with adapted screenplay. Like, you know, stupidly pleased to see that. And then outside of that, I watched Bleeding Love, which is a film which stars, I believe you've seen this one, Ewan McGregor and his real-life daughter. Oh, I think her name is Clara. Yeah, I got that through email. And, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It was, as JB will know, like fathers to daughters, it hit home in certain parts, and it did kind of make you think about, oh man, it's like almost like a cautionary tale at times. But yeah, I thought that was a very, very solid film and a good way to show off Ewan and his daughter's, acting skills. You know, Ewan's been doing, to be fair, Ewan's been doing a lot of good drama on streaming in recent years. Maybe not Obi-Wan Kenobi. I liked him in that, but outside of that, he's been doing some good stuff, and yeah, it's good to see him in a dramatic role like this. Go on.
The scene where they sing the song that the movie's named after.
Oh yeah, Bleeding Love. Yeah,
I love that sequence. It's so good.
Yeah, the way it just kind of it organically happens when she joins in, and when the end credits rolled, I was like, "Is that Ewan McGregor singing?" And I waited until the end credits finished till we got to the music credit, and it was the end credits song, which I thought was pretty damn good. That version was sung by the McGregors, which I thought was quite sweet. I know John's very similar. I like those kind of indie alternative tunes like that. So, Bleeding Love, very decent. Late Night with the Devil, another film I know, JB, I think you saw, David Dalmashian. Yes, that's right. His kind of first lead vehicle. And I'd heard so many good things about Late Night with the Devil. David Dalmashian is a 70s talk show host who tries to do something dastardly in order to get ratings, and I thought this film was very good. but it could have been great. I think it,
yeah,
it started off so good, and then I think it's like the very, very end. I was like, I'm not sure it hit that landing, but you know, there was a really cool seance scene in there, which I very much enjoyed. So I think he's very good. David Damaschke,
he's great
because he's that guy where you know you've seen him from somewhere, but you're not quite sure when, where. For the wider audience, you can believe him as this talk show host. And I always say that if you put like Leo DiCaprio or Brad Pitt or whatever, you know it's them, and you can't quite get your head around the fact that it's them. Someone like David Damaschke, an insanely talented actor, but I bought into the fact, I didn't see him, I saw the TV show host. I wish it had stuck that landing, but I think it's a very solid horror film. And I also saw a film which I can't talk about because it's embargoed till April. It's a French horror film called Infested. And all I can say is it's set in a tower block and it involves spiders. And as somebody who doesn't like spiders, man, did I feel itchy. That's all I can say and all I want to say about it. But yeah, Infested. Other than that, I haven't been doing anything. I've got Ghostbusters Spirit Unleashed. I've installed it. I'm going to play it at some point this week, and then I want to get on there with John. So hopefully I'll be able to say we've played it this time next week. But that is me, John. I hear you've been checking out some films this week.
So I saw 18 films through, cool. Actually, I guess 19, through South by Southwest. Two of them I got links before I went to the festival. Everything else I saw at the festival. I'm just going to list them all first. I saw Resonator, So Torn, Time Stalker, Sing Sing, Oddity, Movie Pass, Movie Crash, that's one movie, My Dead Friend Zoe, Babes, Y2K, Dory Previn, : On My Way to Where, Ghostlight, I Saw the TV Glow, Cryptic, Azrael, The Black Sea, Monkey Man, Bob Trevino Likes It, The Fall Guy, Omniloop, and the last movie I saw at the festival was Kneecap. Whew. Now I'm not going to go over all of them.
I don't want to say worst. What was the best one, and what was the one that maybe disappointed you?
The worst one was Cryptic, which I've now mentioned a few times. I think I was most mad at Azrael because Matt, you've heard me vent many times about horror movies and them breaking their own rules.
Yep.
Azrael is like a textbook example of not establishing the rules of the world that you've built. And every time you start to establish them, throwing them out the window for no apparent reason other than it would be cool to do such. Like, it would be cool if this happened. Like, but you've established that these creatures don't do the thing that you're having them do now. Why are they acting like that now, but not earlier? And then later they act differently again. It's like, dude, pick a lane and then stick to it, you know? And stuff like that drives me crazy because it's got Samara Weaving and she is incredible in this movie.
It always is.
The premise of the movie is that the apocalypse has happened. This is a couple of years later and there is a cult of like fanatics who are mute voluntarily. So there's no dialogue for the majority of the film because all the characters have taken like a vow of silence essentially. So you have these rules and these things and then like, it just does nothing with a lot of it. There are some really cool sequences and Weaving is incredible. But outside of that, it was aggravating because you're like, you tighten a few little story beats up and this movie could be solid. And instead it's just a showcase of some really cool practical effects, or at least what appear to be practical. Maybe they're digital, but so yeah, that movie actually is better than Cryptic, but it made me more mad than Cryptic.
Right. Okay.
The best movie I saw, and I want to say it's a tie. Realistically, it's Sing Sing. Sing Sing not only is Coleman Domingo incredible, and I got to be in the same room with him 2 days before the Oscars. So wild that he, you know, came to support it and even said on stage before the movie that he does movies like Rustin and the other big budget type stuff that he'll like do like small character parts so he can make movies like Sing Sing.
Yep.
But there's a an actor whose name I have to like learn because this is his debut, but it might be one of the most impressive first film performances. And if he doesn't end up getting a supporting actor nod for this movie, it would be shocking. The dude is incredible, undeniable. And I was watching it, thinking it. And then as soon as it ended, all four of us from the Critics Association that were there were just like, holy crap. like, his name is Clarence Macklin. He is,
remember the name,
phenomenal in Sing Sing. It just, for, there's a, this movie does check a lot of my boxes because it is about the power of art and the it's based on a very true story about Sing Sing prison and a program they have in place. I'm going to forget what the acronym is, but it's basically, using theater to help rehabilitate inmates. And it's so good. It's so impressive. It's funny too. It's heartfelt. It's frustrating, but it's, again, it's a true story. And a lot of the actors in it are former inmates of Sing Sing who use this program and have had, the percentage of inmates who use this program get out of prison and then do not return is so high. And that is, if you look statistically at the number of inmates who return to prison, that number is very high. And this program seems to be curving that because they're learning empathy. They're learning cooperation. They're learning how to work within another system.
Yeah.
And it's, those things are things that I'm super passionate about. So it kind of checks those boxes. But I would be remiss not to talk about the next three films really quickly. Ghostlight, cool. For fathers, especially for men who struggle to process emotions because they were told for their whole life not to cry, not, you have to be strong, you have to blah. This movie is going to hit you hard. Fans of Romeo and Juliet, especially if you're like me and taught it for several years and thus have a strong connection to it, will love how the story, he ends up in community theater. This is another acting movie, so what a shock, the two of these. But he's doing Romeo and Juliet. Somehow, the most unbelievable part of this whole movie is that this older construction worker from New Jersey has zero awareness of Romeo and Juliet. Like, has no idea what it is. Like, doesn't know what the premise is. And I'm like, look, I would believe he's never read it. But to believe that he was completely oblivious is real hard for me. Like, but again, I am coming from a place where I know it so intimately. But I feel like there's a lot of Shakespeare plays I've never read, but I am at least aware of what they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because they're so eternal at this point. Right. So it's hard to believe that you wouldn't know at least the idea of what happens at the end. Right. But if you can get past that, and I did, the movie is incredible. It's so emotional. It's so powerful. It's so wonderful. It's funny. It also has another incredible lead performance from a character actor, who, you have seen tons of movies that the actor is in, but probably don't remember that actor whatsoever, kind of thing. Trying to pull up his name because I feel bad not memorizing it, but Keith Kupferer. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly, but he has the look of someone like, he was probably up for the role of James Gandolfini's character in Sopranos, kind of thing, like Tony Soprano. Because he's got that kind of, he's a Jersey guy, big dude. I'm pretty sure if you look at his cast list, he's just a heavy in all of the movies. But yeah, he's great in this. Really, really, really recommend everyone add Ghostlight to their watch list and get ready for it to come out at some point. It does have distribution with IFC, I believe. Nice. So it will be getting out there in the world. Sing Sing is, I think, a trailer dropped while we were at the festival, and I think is coming out in like the next 2 months. So these aren't like movies I saw that no one's going to get to see for a year. These are like in the process of getting distribution out into the world. At least those two are. What was my other... Crud, I just got distracted of what my other...
Too many films. Well,
one is a documentary that I want to mention is Dori Previn, On My Way to Where. I knew literally nothing about Dori Previn. I didn't know... Other than the synopsis about it being a person who scored movies, which is why I picked it to go watch, I didn't know who she was. She is a more than just someone who scored movies, but the thing that I really connected with is that she is apparently kind of the inspiration for Barbra Streisand's character in A Star Is Born, which I just watched not too long ago. So it was like wild, like, oh, what? I didn't even know this woman existed, and I just saw a movie where... even the hairstyle Barbara rocks in that movie at one point is very much what Dori is known for. But I found her story and her life to be so, so compelling. And yeah, I really, really liked that documentary a whole lot, especially I'm going to tell a story about it momentarily, why that screening may have been affected by festival goggles. So I hope it's as good as I felt when I watched it, but I was also like, something else was going on. And lastly, and I can't believe I blanked for a second what my other favorite film is, but I completely remember now. Bob Trevino Likes It. It stars Barbie Ferreira, who is also on Euphoria. She's in Unpregnant with Haley Lou Richardson, which is a Hulu movie, if I remember correctly. Might not be a Hulu movie. It's a streaming movie, but it's really good. She is phenomenal in this, and so is John Leguizamo and French Stewart. It's such a personal story. It's based on something that the director and the writer experienced, but it's, dude, the amount of tears that I shed, but also the amount of laughs that I had. My critic friend, who was at the festival with us, made a really good point, because there's a shot at the beginning of the movie. It's a close-up of Barbie crying, like just crying. Mm-hmm. And it's used for laughs. We're not laughing at her crying. We're laughing at like the scenario in which it's intentional. Like, we're not laughing at her. Like, you're supposed to kind of laugh, but she is crying. It's like so weird. And then later there's a scene where it's a close-up of her crying and you are crying with her. And it's this story. You can tell how personal it is because it's so real. It feels, even like the scenes that are like, clearly this scene is written for the movie, it just feels so thought out and well, you know, processed, that you kind of forgive those like constructed elements, because it's coming from a place of real emotion and real love. And God, it's such a good movie. It's so powerful. It's a chosen family movie, which is another kind of favorite genre for me. I love if they're done well, I love them, and this one is done so well. So those are my four favorite films of the festival.
I'm just pleased that you had a good time, JB, because you've gone all the way across all of those states on an American journey, and I'm just glad it was worth it. I must ask, so JB, My Dead Friend Zoe, I think that was one of the five or six films I mentioned during my June review, that it looked like it could be quite good. It sounded like it was. Was it any good?
Yes. Okay, definitely. Specifically, like, I like the lead actress whose name I'm not gonna remember, but she was Sasha on The Walking Dead. It's Shaniqua. I might be getting that wrong, but she's really good. She's asked to be kind of the serious side, though, where Natalie Morales is so freaking funny. It's such a unique movie, because it is about PTSD and like, it has a message movie about soldiers.
Yep.
But it has so much humor, and it's dark humor, because like, you meet Natalie Morales and the main character, Merritt is her name, and the character name, while they're in the military, and you hear Natalie Morales' character name is Zoe. Now, if the title isn't giving you enough from that, she's going to be dead, because her name is Zoe, right? Yep. But she's not gone. Like, when the movie started, I thought we were going to be flashing back just to like her alive. But instead, she is like this kind of American Werewolf almost vibe of like the ghost friend, but it's not a ghost. It's a memory. You know, like, she's projecting her friend being there, even though she's not there. You don't know why she's not there.
Right.
That's kind of the mystery of the movie, but she represents like this, the mourning. She's not able to let go of her friend. And so her friend is there, and Natalie Morales is having a blast. Some of the jokes are very dark, because she's kind of aware that she's not there. And so she might make a joke about, "Ooh, that's rough," or something like that. And, but man, it's just, Morales has got such good comedic timing. I was just multiple times laughing at stuff that she said. So yeah, I really like My Dead Friend Zoe.
Sweet. Okay, I'm happy then, JP, and I'm again glad that you managed to see all of those films, and seems rather positive overall. So yeah, glad and to hear that, just, my friend.
Well, I don't have time to go through all of them on the podcast. My reviews are up at Disappointment Media, and a few at Burke Reviews. Most are at Disappointment Media. I think almost all of them are up. So nice. If you want to know like my thoughts on My Dead Friend Zoe, or Babes, which is a hilarious movie with Alana Glazer, or the new oh, I'm going to forget his name. The Y2K, though, has Rachel Zegler and Jaden Martell and Julian Dennison, and it's a millennial movie. If you like myself, if you're class of 2000, that's a movie you should definitely, you're going to want to check out for, at the very least, nostalgia reasons.
Sweet.
But yeah, that's what I've been consuming. And folks, that's pretty much our episode. But before we go, we got to check in with one another and find out how we've been staying bloody awesome. Matt, I just looked at yours. I'm very curious what this could mean. So, Matt, how have you been staying bloody awesome?
Well, it's not something I've actually really talked about, John. But in terms of, I mean, I worked this weekend. So, you know, if anyone from work's listening, it was bloody awesome. But I'm not going to say that it was. So I haven't really been doing an awful lot outside of that. But on Wednesday of the week we are recording, I went up to Disney HQ up in London. Disney, the Mouse House headquarters, the EMEA headquarters, up in London, alongside my buddy Luke at Star Wars Sessions. And we were invited there to look at stuff and to be told stuff. That's pretty much all I can say right now, because we had to sign a paper or two. But it was just very cool to go up to the Mouse House, see the office, basically, and see the everything. Everywhere you look, there is either new Disney's, like Disney, Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel, or there's classic Disney imagery around. It just looks wonderful, and it's just a very cool experience to be able to go up there and we see a few people we know as well, which was very cool from the company. So yeah, it's just a nice little trip up to the Mouse House on a Wednesday afternoon. But again, I can't say anything about it, but it was good. That's all I can say. But
very cool.
I wonder what you've been doing, JB. Surely going to sleep will be your bloody awesome tonight.
So I'm needing to. South by Southwest is the obvious answer here, but I'm going to tell a few stories real fast. I'm going to try to be real quick with it. The first is, I'll start with the worst and I'll go to the best. So on my, today's Thursday when we're recording this, folks, and I came home Wednesday. Now, I am a panic-prone person, and I am especially with time. I hate the idea of potentially missing my flight. It terrifies me to my core, and I stupidly scheduled my flight for 8 o'clock in the evening, not in the morning. So I have the whole day to just be anxious and worried that I'm not going to make my flight.
Yep.
And it's the worst. I don't know why I did this to myself. I literally have, like, anxiety throughout the day. But on top of that, Sean Big Tuna, who I was there with and writing for, really encouraged me to see two movies on Wednesday. And in my head, I'm like, I can just go to the airport. I'd rather be there for 6 hours and know I'm going to be there when my flight comes than risk missing. Cause I also, I'm worried about like cost for sure. Like if they're going to charge me, if I miss that kind of thing. But in reality, I was ready to come home. I miss my wife. I wanted to be back in my house with my wife and my animals, and my daughter and be home. Like 6 days is a long time. And I'm exhausted. Like I am burnt out. Like, so I was ready to be home. So that made the anxiety of missing my flight even more stressful, because I'm like, if I miss it, that means I'm stuck here another day kind of thing. You know, in my head, that's where I'm at. So I get out of the 5 o'clock, the movie ends at like 5:15. I get my bags. Sean was really cool and had my bags for me, cause we had to check out of our hotel and stuff. And, I get into a Lyft, and I was kind of mad because the Lyft was expensive. It was 5 o'clock. So, you know, rush hour traffic, and it's South by Southwest. So surge pricing is a thing. And I was like, holy crap, this is a lot. I have no choice. I have to get to the airport. So I need to be in my head. I need to be at the airport by 6 o'clock, right? It's, it's going to be like 6:05. This airport is kind of small, and I heard the TSA was real fast and they're really thorough at this particular airport in a good way, like thorough, like they're trying to get everyone in and out. Like they're not messing around. So I'm not really stressing. I'm like, good, 6 o'clock's perfect. So I'm in this Lyft. I had to get a Lyft XL too. So I'm in a van, which I did. It was just the cheapest option. We're 10 minutes into the 20-minute drive, and I am in a car accident. The Lyft driver hits a person who pulls out in front of us. And luckily, there was enough traffic. We weren't going very fast. So there's damage, but not severe. None of us are injured. But now I don't know what to do. I'm literally stuck in the van for like 5 minutes because we're in the middle of the road, which is a super busy road. And, he's left me. He's checked on me. He was very nice. You know, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, are you okay? Cause like, I'm a concerned person, and I'm just like, but I don't know what to do. So I'm just stuck. I'm like, are you going to cancel this? Like, what happens? Can we still go to the airport? Like, I need to get to the airport. I'm freaking out. The cops have him move the van. The cops interview me. Just, you know, want my, what happened? Kind of embarrassingly, Matt, I look at the cop and go, there's no chance of like a police escort to the airport, is there? Like, and the cop kind of laughed. I'm like, I watch a lot of movies. In the movies, that's what happens, right? Like, you're like, oh no, we'll get you to the airport, sir. Don't worry. No, that's not what happens. Like, yeah, that's not what happens. So I had to get into a different ride share. I got an Uber instead of a Lyft, and the Uber guy got me there on time. I did make my flight.
Good.
I'm still not hurt. As far as I know, no one was hurt. I did talk to the lady who got hit. I had to talk to the insurance this morning. It was a whole thing. My fear, the thing that I've always been afraid of happening in a rideshare thing happened. And I will say there's a degree of final destination to this week, because earlier in the week I noted a billboard for a lawyer whose whole platform is injured in a ride sharing accident. And I'm like, that's weird. Does that happen a lot? And then it freaking happened to me. So, yeah, but so that was the bad thing that happened. Like, but hands down, the worst thing that happened.
We're glad you're okay, John. And it was injury free, if not stress free.
Now, the most inconsequential but funny thing that happened was we were sharing Ubers a lot. There was four of us from CACF, all kind of crashing at the same Airbnb. Went to not all of the same movies, but some of the same big movies, especially. But Sean had to order us an Uber, sir. And we're not small guys. None of us are. And he forgot to hit the XL button. So a Toyota Camry shows up. And I am in the middle of two of the guys in the back seat. We barely get the doors closed, man. We literally are like, I'm worried that we're going to burst out of these doors. Like, the definition of clown car happens here. And then we get to our destination, which is the Alamo Draft House. And there is a long line of people that we are parked in front of as we roll out of the car. Like, I mean, the ridiculousness of it, you really, like, I can't describe it well enough for it to be as funny as it was to the four of us, but we will never forget this. And I'm sure that Uber driver tells horror stories to other people. This one time I picked up these guys and they were just like crammed in my car. Like, I don't know if he had to go put air in his tires. There's just no way that car was designed for what we did to it.
Just men. That's all it is. Manly men. That's all you are.
But the last two real fast stories, Monkey Man. I waited in line for 2.5 hours to get inside to see Monkey Man.
Both of these, in fact, I've been waiting days to hear this.
Now, so all of the big premieres at South By are in this theater called the Paramount Theater. Yep. And usually for the big movies, especially if the cast is there, they have a red carpet in front. They have this big, like, South By Southwest, like, banner that they stand in front of and take pictures, and they do press inquiries and stuff. And so we're in line because we were not guaranteed access, but we did get in. And as we're walking into the door, we have our little badge. We have these little papers we have to give to prove that we were, you know, in line or whatever. I'm handing the paper. I look over. I see Dev Patel is in front of the red carpet thing still. And I shout, I love you, Dev, and walk in, right? Now, we've been in line for 2 hours. Cannot move from the line. Have not had anything to drink, but also have not been able to use the bathroom. We get to our seats. Tuna had an express pass, so he was guaranteed access. We were not. But he was saving seats for me and the other two guys. So we get to the seats. I look at the guy I was standing with. I don't want to name drop because I don't want him to just like say his name if he doesn't want his name like on a podcast. So I'm not saying his name, but I look at him and I'm like, hey, I got to pee. He's like, so do I. I'm like, oh, you can go first. Cause like if all of us go, our seats are just empty again and someone will take them. So you kind of got to go in shifts. And he's like, no, go ahead. I'm like, all right, cool. So I go. Now their bathroom is kind of weird. Like when you first walk in, there's mirrors and sinks and you have to kind of go around a corner to get to the actual toilets. Right. So I'm using the toilet. When I come back around, I look and there's someone at the sink and the guy looks up in the mirror and it's Dev Patel. We lock eyes. We lock eyes and folks, I'm going to curse. And I say out loud, oh shit, to which Dev Patel laughs because I have said that in response to like seeing that he is in the bathroom with me. Now he's full soap all over his hands. He's probably just shook like 1,000 hands. So he's like washing his hands. And or he's like Michael Shannon in Shape of Water and he washes his hands before he touches his junk.
Yes.
I go and I wash my hands at the adjacent sink. Now, there's someone with him, I'm assuming a security, but in hindsight, I think it might have been Charlotte Copley, and I didn't look. But Dev Patel is in the bathroom, and I'm like, I love Green Knight. Like, I said that to him, I'm washing my hands. I hesitate. I almost try to take a selfie, realize it's not appropriate to do that in the bathroom, so I'm not going to. But I like hesitate way too long. I'm standing there awkwardly for way too long. But finally, I'm like, hey, congrats on tonight. And then I left. I go back to the seat and tell the guys, I'm like, I feel really bad for my friend because, like, I said you can go. He said, no, no, you go. And I then meet Dev Patel simply because of that chance. So incredible. Seemed so charming, so kind. Another dude was also there. And I think wanted to shake his hand, but Dev was like, well, I got soap in my hands, but I would shake your hand. Just seems so sincere and genuine. And if you listen to, he's got like a letterbox interview from that night, the way he's being interviewed there, that's how he talked on stage both before and after. He's so clearly nervous, excited. Just can't believe what,
'cause he just
what
met
he's
you.
Experiencing. Yes, exactly. You're such a good guy, Matt. Which I will then conclude with the story that, made me cry this weekend in a good way. But a long time ago, before I started film criticism, I started listening to podcasts. And one of the podcasts that I got into early was Doug Loves Movies. And Doug Loves Movies used to play a game called the Leonard Maltin game. And while I kind of was aware of Leonard Maltin then, or before then, that made me very aware of Leonard Maltin, right? Like I looked into what his book was and then Leonard would occasionally guest on Douglas Movies, and I thought he was always so fun and charming, and I don't always agree with his take on movies, but I love how he expresses his thoughts on movies. He's become a film critic that I really admire and look up to. And then when I started film criticism, he was one who I immediately started reading a bunch of his reviews and kind of like getting a gauge of how do you talk when you're writing a film review and things like that, and along with like Roger Ebert and some other big-time critics, but I've always looked up to Leonard. And then he's had his own podcast. Initially, he did one with Baron Vaughn that I listened to, and then he does one with his daughter Jessie. I've listened to both. I'm a fan. And when I went to see Dori Previn, I went in immediately. I was one of the first ones there. I got my ticket. I went into Alamo. 2 minutes after I'm sitting in my theater, Sean, who's going to a different movie that's like 20 minutes later, texts me and goes, dude, if you had waited 2 minutes to go into your theater, you would have seen Leonard Maltin. Right? As I read this, I'm thinking to myself reading it like, well, if he's walked into the theater, what movie other than mine could he be going to see? And I literally, as I'm thinking this, look up and there he is walking into my theater.
Yes.
And I'm like, what? No freaking way. And I text Sean, like, he's in my movie. And Sean's like, oh, go say hi to him. Now, I am not a person to approach people like that, especially like celebrities. I always feel I know they get bombarded with people. So I don't want to be one of those guys. And he's talking to someone who is not Jesse. So it's not his daughter. So whoever he's talking to, I don't know who it is. They're talking. I don't want to be rude. So I let it happen. Later, I find out it's one of the directors of the documentary that I was seeing who was also excited to see Leonard Maltin at her movie. Rightfully so, because Leonard doesn't go to a lot of stuff at this point. Like he's retired for the most part. So if he's picked your movie to watch at a festival, he's made a very intentional decision. So I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna. You and Sean both tell me I should go say hi to him. I'm about to, and my cauliflower, the buffalo cauliflower I alluded to earlier, shows up. There's like 5 minutes to the movie. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to leave my food just sitting here, right? So, like, I scarf it down. And there's 2 minutes of the movie. The director has left. Leonard's alone. And I look to the person who is sitting next to me, who I do not know, but felt the need to, like, let her know I was coming back. Because I feel obviously, because the food has been eaten but not paid for. So, like, I want, if in case someone shows up, I want them to know that I'm not gone. So I look at her, and I'm like, I'll be right back. And she kind of is like, okay, I don't know who you are. But I walk down to Leonard Maltin and I say, Mr. Maltin, Matt, they say don't meet your heroes.
They do.
And I am so glad to say that that was not the case with Mr. Maltin. Not only could he have not been more sincere, he asked my name. Oh, hold on. Because like I am right now talking a little rapidly, I was very nervous that I was doing this. And I was definitely talking a little bit much. I honestly, it's kind of a blur. I don't remember all the things I said. I said way too many things about myself, for sure. And but he was so kind, so gracious. And one of the things I brought up was that I knew he taught at USC, and I would love to take his class, but I've never gone to film school. Again, I'm rambling way too much to Mr. Moulton, who's there to watch a movie in like less than a minute. And he invites me to sit in on his class if I'm ever in LA.
Come on.
Which I know that could just be a gesture of kindness. It felt very sincere though. And he even did the thing. He's like, I'm just a guy. Like, I'm not, you know, don't, he's like trying to calm me down. Clearly I was visibly nervous. So I all that happens, I thank him. I shake his hand, initial handshake when I meet him. And then I awkwardly shake it to say goodbye. And I don't know why. I've never done that before that I can think of, but I didn't want to just like walk away from him. I was also very afraid he was going to like offer me to sit next to him. And like, I already had the food at the other thing. So like, I'm like, my logical brain's like, well, it'd be inconvenient for the workers to have to move my tab. You know, but again, he didn't offer. I'm just assuming that he was gonna, but so I go back to my seat. And as I'm sitting down, the lady who I told I was going to, I'll be right back. She's like, that was so sweet. And at that moment, it occurs to me that I just gave everyone in the theater a show. Because he was towards the front. So that everyone else was basically in the back of the theater and could not only see me talking to Mr. Mullen, but could hear every word I was saying because it's the silent theater before the movie. Never once occurred to me that that would be a thing. And then I'm like a little self-conscious afterwards. But I sat there, man, and thought, not only was he so kind and so nice, but I had just met someone who I really, really look up to, and I could not hold back the tears. It was one of those moments where like I didn't fully know why I was crying, but I was crying. And it was like real tears. It wasn't like a tear. It was like, uh-oh. I need to get it under control. But yeah, I've been to a few festivals at this point in person, and I've never had a celebrity encounter. I've been, you know, where they're on stage and I'm there. But like, I didn't meet Daveed Diggs when I saw Blindspotting. I didn't meet Bo Burnham when I saw Eighth Grade. So this was surreal that this year I actually ran into, I have these stories of actual interactions with people. And that they were both incredible, that both Dev Patel and Leonard Maltin were so cool, so kind. Leonard even more so, 'cause I actually got to like have a conversation versus like poor. If I'd run into Dev like outside of the bathroom, I probably would have tried a little harder, but I'm assuming he's probably got to pee and he's got to still get like moments later after I meet him, he's on stage talking about Monkey Man. So like it was, you know, a lot going on for him. So I wasn't trying to add to his night of pressure, but South by Southwest, with the exception of the accident, was mostly great. Yeah, it was at the end. It almost stopped me from getting home in time, and it did. It definitely rattled me. I've avoided accidents, which I think most of us try to do, but I've been fortunate enough to do so until yesterday. Yeah, it was nerve wracking. Again, luckily no one seems to be hurt, and yeah, a crazy fun 6 days. There, I did a bunch of other stuff too. There's going to be posts on Instagram. I have pictures of activations and things. I got to film Sean interviewing Jonathan Nolan, man.
Oh, yes, freaking, yeah.
Christopher Nolan's brother. I was 4 feet away from him. Apparently, he goes by Jonah, by the way. We learned really? That. Everyone calls him Jonah, dude. Like, Walton Goggins is like, oh, yeah, Jonah's a great guy. And Sean and I are like, who the heck is Jonah? And like, we put it together, but like, never heard anyone outside and then the I don't know the guy's name, but the creator of like the Fallout series talked to Sean, gave some incredible sound bites. And then Walton Goggins, dude, like I'm literally standing 2 feet away while Sean's talking to him, holding a freaking lapel mic in his face, and I'm recording it. It's like Walton Goggins is right here. And we're in like the set of Fallout, essentially, because that's what the activation was, is like they recreate elements of the show that's coming out on Amazon Prime. I got to do that this week, just, you know, because why not? You know, that's the world that I get to live in now. So a fun time, South by Southwest. Austin, Texas is incredible. I had some awesome food, some Cooper's barbecue on, I forget the road that it's on, but man, dude, such good brisket. I had, I had a few different like tacos that were outstanding. So much coffee, man. I had so many different cups of coffee this week. And, what was the other? Oh, in my opinion, like there's a chain of like, there's a type of fast food hamburger now in the US. We have like Five Guys and In-N-Out. They're like the elevated fast food. They're a little pricier, but much better quality. Like it's always like, you know, fresh, never frozen beef kind of stuff. Right. Yeah. P. Terry's is a native to Austin. It's so affordable for what you get. Like, you get a double cheeseburger that tastes so fresh with fries for like $10. And I wish we had them here. If we had them here, that would be my number one burger place. It's so good. It was great having it again, because I had it when I was there in 2018, and I've honestly wanted it since then, and it did not disappoint when I did get it this time around. I only got it once, unfortunately, because of time. And then Alamo Drafthouse. Y'all need to expand faster, because we need theaters that love movies like y'all do, because they do theme months, man. They're doing 1994 this month. So, like, they're showing all these big movies from 1994 this month. And I'm like, man, I wish I lived near a theater that does stuff like this. But yeah, that was my trip. Sorry to go on such a long tangent about South by Southwest, but that's how I was staying bloody awesome this week.
I am here for it, JB, and I've been waiting to hear those, those final two stories for days now, and they didn't disappoint. So I'm so glad that you got to meet Leonard Maltin. The guy sounds like an absolute king. I mean, I followed him for years as well. But I'm pleased that the stars aligned like that. And let's not gloss over the fact that you were in the same room as the Goz as well.
I do want to say, to your credit, man, listeners, if you've listened to this show for a while or not, you need to know that Matt might be the best hype man in the business.
It's true, though.
Because I texted Matt that Leonard Maltin is in the theater with me, and he said, in response to my text, that he heard Leonard Maltin just texted Jesse that Burke Reviews is in the room with him. Like, with no hesitation, he didn't have to think of that. It just came out. That level of support you don't find very often. So, Matt, my British counterpart, man, thank you for always backing me and my crazy adventures. It's awesome to have a friend like you.
Always there, my friend. And John works harder than most people I've ever known. So I'm glad to see things like good people get good rewards. So I'm very, very pleased for that. And there's also that element of, because I know what you mean, I don't like going up to people, especially people of note, because I don't know how to say to them hello. But if you don't do it, you're going to sit down and think, oh, I wish I'd done it. It's kind of, hopefully it's not a once in a lifetime opportunity. Hopefully you get many more opportunities, but you never know. It's one of those things where it could be there any time. So I'm glad that you did, my friend. And
me too.
JB sent me a picture of Ryan Gosling on stage from where he was sitting. And I just sent back, what? it was just so casual. You know, I'm just in a room with Ryan Gosling and, you know, Rachel Zegler's there on another day and all these other big stars and cool people. And it's great, man. I do. When a festival is as seemingly well-run as South by Southwest, and also the city and everything kind of coalesces together for that experience, and they're great, I'll say, weekends, but in your case, they're great weeks that you remember for a long time. So glad to have you back in the saddle, but I'm also glad it was a nice week in Texas.
Indeed, it was. And folks, that is our episode on the film Imaginary. It almost feels like it didn't happen. Like, it's not real.
I'm not
going
to say it.
Next week, it looks like we're going to be talking about Arthur the King, the new Mark Wahlberg movie that is made to make you cry because it has a dog and it's implied that the dog is sick.
Excellent. It's probably still a better actor than Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Yep. And it's going... I think Simu Lee is in it, which is cool. I like him. I haven't seen him in too many movies.
Simu Lee. I've got to shout out Simu Lee. You just reminded me. Because obviously he's in Barbie. He's one of the Kens. Mm-hmm. One of the kind of leading supporting Kens. He was there at the Oscars. He was his part of the dance choreography. And when he had his time to get his face on screen in towards the end before they revealed Slash was there to the watching audience. My man, he absorbed every millisecond to get his face on screen. I was, you know, respect, because it's one of those scenes where there's four dancers, you know, stacked behind each other, and one runs up to the camera and moves away, and the next one runs up to the camera, that kind of thing. Simu, he kept holding on till just before he was almost too late. He saw his shot of getting his face on the big show, and he took it. So respect to that. The other three behind him had to rush before, because they were going about to ruin the reveal of Slash. But yeah, shout out to Simu Liu for taking his chance there.
hey, you gotta take it when you get it, right? Who knows when you're gonna be on stage at the Oscars again? You know, like that's. I mean, to be completely real, there's a lot of big name celebrities who've never had that opportunity. Exactly. So you get it, you use it, and good for him.
He did.
But we'll be back to talk about that movie probably, unless we find something else that we can review.
Yes.
Not that we don't want to see Arthur the King, but you know,
you never know what comes out in between
or on streaming, maybe. Anyways. You can follow us in the meantime on social media, on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. We're Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. Matt, where are we on Twitter or X?
We are at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast.
And you can search us on Facebook, just Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. Of course, we are Rotten Tomatoes approved podcast. So look for our, I'm pretty sure, Rotten on
Oh, God, yes.
Imaginary, dropping in a few days. I am at BurkeReviews.com, and also I write for DisappointmentMedia.com, so check out those places for my reviews, but follow me on social media, at BurkeReviews. Matt, where can they find you?
WhatIWatchTonight.co.uk, and just search What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd.
And if you like what we're doing here at the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, we ask that you take just a moment and give us that 5-star rating to help other people find the show. With that, we encourage you to keep watching movies.
And stay bloody awesome. Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody. Awesome!